Honestly, until I started cooking with fancy flakes of artisan hand-harvested sea salt, which, by the way, is an excellent bargain at Costco, I never really thought that much about salt at all. For us, salt is an everyday condiment. It's boring, cheap, ubiquitous. But for much of human history, salt was precious. As Mark Kurlansky reminds us in his book, Salt, A World History, salt was so valuable and so scarce, the cultures built entire economies around it. They fought wars and founded cities just because of salt. At one point in the ancient world, salt was even currency. Its presence or its absence could determine life or death. And there is even an ornate gold and gem-encrusted salt cellar that is displayed alongside the crown jewels of England. So, when Jesus was talking, his first followers would have heard something very different than our modern kind of cliched understanding of salt of the earth. They heard the physics of survival, preservation, endurance, life itself. Salt wasn't just decorative. It kept meat from rotting. It kept bodies alive. To call someone salt was to say, you matter. You are essential. You are salt. But then Jesus immediately adds a warning, because of course he does, he's Jesus. Salt can lose its saltiness, which suggests that the risk for the disciples is not weakness, it's not brokenness, it's becoming bland, diluted, safe. The danger isn't being strange, the danger is being irrelevant. Nadia Boltz-Weber offers us a helpful insight here. She points out that Jesus is not preaching to some, and these are her words, special class of awesome, shiny people here. He's preaching to people whose lives are already salty in a very literal sense. They're full of sweat and tears and wounds and longing. And instead of telling them, go clean yourselves up, Jesus says this group right here, this is exactly what God can use. Salt stings if you've ever gotten it in a wound. It tells the truth. It doesn't pretend that everything is fine. And yet, salt also heals. It preserves things. It brings out flavors that were already there. The salt Jesus is talking about is not polite, but it's honest. It's real. And like my bougie sea salt, it has texture. You are also light. In a similar way, light doesn't whisper. Light can't hide. Light reveals things, sometimes things that we would rather not see. A city on a hill cannot be hidden, Jesus says. A lamp isn't meant to be put in a closet or tucked in a drawer. It's meant to be seen. Being light, being salt, is not a call to private faith. It's not a call for spirituality that stays safely inside the church building. It's a call to visibility. Not for our own ego, but visibility for the sake of the world. And here, I think, an unexpected voice can help us. Salmon Nosrat, in her book, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. Yep, we're going to talk about salt again. she says something fascinating about salt. It doesn't exist to dominate a dish. Salt doesn't add a new flavor, but it reveals the flavors that are already there. Without salt, food tastes flat. With it, things come alive. Sweet becomes sweeter. Bitter becomes more complex. Everything becomes more fully itself. And that is a profoundly theological idea. The church's role is not to overpower the world, control the world, or shame the world. Our role is to help the world taste more fully like what God intended. Justice and mercy and dignity, delight, belovedness. When we're salty in the Jesus way, we don't erase difference. We help truth actually come into focus. Nosrat also insists that salt must be applied intentionally. Too little, it does nothing. Too much, and it's overwhelming. So wisdom matters. Attention matters. Love matters. And so does presence. Salt has to actually touch the food for it to do anything. It can't stay in the shaker, even if it's a beautiful, elaborate golden one. And likewise, light only works if it's exposed. A hidden light might as well just be no light at all. And that means that being salt and light sometimes will make us uncomfortable. We'll be detected. We'll be known. It may even make us unpopular. There's absolutely nothing strategically comfy about feeding the hungry or confronting racism, welcoming LGBTQ+ siblings, accompanying immigrants, or caring for the earth. It's not comfortable. It's not formulaic. It's not neat. But it's exactly what Christ's light looks like. Like salt that seasons, light is sometimes glaring, sometimes disruptive, and it can be startling because it exposes what's been hidden. The real danger Jesus names is not us being imperfect. It's us losing our distinctiveness, becoming so cautious, so polite, so afraid of offense that we no longer flavor anything, becoming so hidden that our light never reaches the places that need it most. Jesus doesn't say to us, make yourselves impressive. He says, let your light shine so that others may see your good works and give glory to God. Not glory to us, not applause for the church, glory to God. And perhaps the most astounding part of all of this is Jesus doesn't condition this call on perfection. He doesn't say, when you get your life together, then you can go out and be salt and light. He just says, you are. And his pastor, Nadia, reminds us it's often in our brokenness that we recognize our need for God. And thus, the presence of God doing something through us becomes the most evident. Or, in other words, to quote Leonard Cohen, there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. You are salt. You are light. So may we be a church that is salty enough to heal, bold enough to speak truth, foolish enough to love, and wise enough to know that God is already at work, bringing out the flavor of grace in a world starving for it.